This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, October the 3rd, 2014. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. We have extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending Friday the 3rd of October 2014. Gordon and Liz Legg are our editors this week. If you have any problems at all with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And I'm pleased to introduce again your readers this week, and that's Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for today, Ros Lydiard. Well, we'll begin, as we usually do, with the main headlines, which this week are: Police, we don't enforce 20 zones. Tributes as former bishop dies, aged 71. We feel disaffected, councillors are told. And Claire, can you start off, please, with that first headline story?
Headed, Police, we don't enforce 20 zones. Winchester's transport chief has said there is no point in an unenforced speed limit after police revealed that speeding drivers who ignore the city centre's new 20 miles an hour cap would escape prosecution. Councillor Mike Southgate, Winchester City Council's portfolio holder for transport, said he was disappointed police would not enforce the 20 mile an hour zone, which was introduced to the city centre and parts of Hyde in August. He said, "The whole point of restrictions is to emphasise to people that you consider 20 as the appropriate maximum speed. I'm not too depressed by the fact that they're not legally enforceable." He added the limit was designed to create a feeling of ambience and calm, and similar restrictions were working in towns and cities such as Portsmouth. Police told a town forum meeting last week that they do not enforce 20-mile-an-hour zones. City centre speed could instead be monitored by volunteers with no enforcement powers through community speed watch schemes. Belinda Kingsley of Hampshire Constabulary said that police could visit speeding hotspots but would not punish offenders. She said, "They can go out with the speed watch teams, but you're not going to get enforcement taking place. My understanding is we don't enforce 20 mile an hour limits. Speed watch is a deterrent. Motorists caught by speed watch receive a letter informing them of their speed, with repeat offences culminating in a verbal warning from a police community support officer." Councillor Ian Tate said, "What we are trying to achieve, if the police are not going to enforce virtually everybody speeding, what have we achieved with that? They could be sending out thousands of letters a week. It doesn't work." The reduction from 30 miles an hour was designed to cut carbon emissions and encourage more people to walk or cycle to work. Councillor Chris Pines told the meeting, "It is working. Speeds are coming down. That must be the case. I have certainly observed that." He added that speed watch volunteers, who primarily operate in 30 and 40 mile an hour zones outside of the city centre, could join forces to monitor the new 20 mile an hour zone. After the meeting, Councillor Fiona Mather said, "Winchester College is interested in adopting the limit in the streets surrounding its campus." She added that she had received more messages from communities wishing to adopt the limit themselves, more than complaints about the current scheme. National guidelines from the Association of Chief Police Officers advised that enforcement should be considered in 20-mile-an-hour zones where there is deliberate speeding or the limit is unclear. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes said police follow ACPO advice as part of routine patrols. He said it is not simply a matter to impose a speed limit. Local authorities should engineer a limit, leaving the police to target persistent and deliberate offenders where there is evidence of regular and deliberate offending. As with all crimes, including the breaking of speed limits, the police will use discretion when to enforce the law and how that enforcement might take place.
Tributes as former bishop dies aged 71. Praise for faithful and hard-working servant. The former Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Michael Scott Joint, has died aged 71. His death on Saturday afternoon, surrounded by his family, came just 3 years after his retirement from the role, which he held for 16 years. Bishop Scott Joint had previously served as Bishop of Stafford and as a residentiary canon at St Albans Cathedral, during a career in the Anglican Church that spanned more than four decades. He was the Bishop's spokesman on constitutional affairs in the House of Lords and chaired a Church of England committee which advocated relaxing the rules governing the remarriage of divorcees in church. A strong supporter of traditional relationships, Bishop Scott Joint opposed both the appointment of an openly homosexual canon as a bishop in 2003 and the introduction of civil partnerships. He admitted this was a stance which was uncomfortable to take when so many of his family, friends and colleagues either disagreed with it or were embarrassed by it. The bishop will be additionally remembered for condemning the 9/11 terrorist attacks as cruelly evil in his address on Christmas Day 2001. Following his death, Archbishop of Canterbury Justin Welby said the Church of England had lost a faithful, hard-working and distinguished servant. With his ability to grasp detail and a remarkable stamina, he fulfilled all the demands made of him with a willingness that made him highly respected, not only in the church, but far beyond, he said. Michael Scott Joint was the 96th Bishop of Winchester, one of the five most senior bishoprics within the Church of England. He is survived by his wife Lou, two sons and a daughter. The bishop was renowned for his warmth, intellect and his height, as he stood a full 6'7" tall. Paying tribute, his successor, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, said, "Michael led this diocese with great integrity, both through his ministry and his strength of personality."
We feel disaffected, councillors are told. The public and councillors have clashed again over the extent to which Winchester is consulted about new developments. A special meeting of the Cabinet discussed an initial draft of the detailed local plan for all forthcoming projects, both large and small. Some 4,000 new homes are set to be built in the city in the next decade. Barton Farm on the northern fringes will provide half that total. Silver Hill, the current police headquarters, plus the Pitt Manor and Francis Gardens developments are set to yield another 900 homes, and the conversion of part of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital could provide a further 58. But the meeting last week proved tetchy at times, with Worthy Lane resident Caroline Dennis telling councillors, "As residents, we feel disaffected. We're not being listened to, nor are our views and local knowledge being sought." One city councillor, in the context of another proposed local development, which has incurred many objections, referred to local residents and protesters as rent-a-mob. Are the people really acting in our interests? Lib Dem councillor Robert Hutchison drew applause from a packed public gallery when he told the Conservative-led cabinet, I think we're making a lot of mistakes, and I think it's time we did it better. One of the things we're very bad at is public engagement. We've alienated a lot of local people, and they feel their views are not being taken seriously. But Cabinet Vice Chairman Victoria Weston said the draft plan was the result of around 20 months' work, which included extensive public involvement and council consultation, which went far beyond what it was obliged to carry out. To get to this stage, there's been a lot of work with local communities in Winchester Town, she said. Public ire focused on the possibility of future redevelopment at the station approach and cattle market area. Councillor Hutchinson said there was strong local opinion supporting the preservation of the Victorian-built register office, which could be knocked down. But City Council Corporate Director Steve Tilbury said there had only been an initial report on a possible capital market redevelopment so far. What we're considering here is policy in terms of land use, he added. Another initial draft of the detailed district plan will be published shortly, after which there will be a period of public consultation between October the 24th and December the 5th. The intention is that the finalised plan will be examined within Whitehall and formally adopted in July 2016. The number of sites and houses in each village is Bishop's Waltham, 4 sites, 380 homes. Coldon Common, 1 site, 165 homes. Kingsworthy, 1 site, 50 homes. Alsford, 2 sites, 385 homes. Swanmore, 3 sites, 215 homes. Waltham Chase, 4 sites, 175 homes. Wickham, 2 sites, 205 homes. Denmead, 4 sites, 130 homes. The issue in Alsford has been highly controversial. Robert Fowler of the Sun Hill and Tichborne Down Action Group told the meeting, "We feel our views have been ignored and we have a better plan we can outline to you."
And thank you very much for those headlines. And we're going to read the death notices now, and I will start off, and then Claire will read Christian comment for us. Bumstead, Philip Edward Bumstead, peacefully, on the 24th of September, aged 77.
Clark, David Stanley Clark, passed away peacefully on the 27th of September, aged 83.
Craig, Dr. Harry Lindsay Craig, on his 87th birthday, September the 25th, after a long illness.
Elkington, Professor Andrew Elkington, CBE, died peacefully on 11th September, aged 78.
Johnson, Kathleen Daisy Joan Johnson, on the 25th of September, aged 92 years.
Lester, Josephine Cecilia Florence Lester, née Probert, after a long illness on 26th of September, aged 82.
Meadows, Hilda Tina Meadows, peacefully at home on the 21st of September, aged 91 years.
Scott Joint, the Right Reverend Michael Charles Scott Joint, Bishop of Winchester, 1995 to 2011, on 27th September, aged 71.
Thomas, Jack Marcus Panico Thomas, now at peace.
Smith, Jean Audrey Smith, on 28th of September, aged 81.
Suter, John Barron Suter, peacefully in hospital on the 26th of August, aged 89.
Webster, Gillian Webster, née Mahon, on 24th September, aged 94 years.
Thank you. And Claire, if you give us Christian comment, I think this week is contributed by Terry E. Hemming.
Indeed. He's entitled it, "We Should Find Our Place Within All of Creation." Recently, I have been driving through the beautiful Hampshire landscape with a Danish visitor. It seems amusing that my grandmother, some 60 years ago, complained that there was no more countryside. She claimed it had all been built on since she had been a child. Yet the WWF shocked us this week, asserting that 50% of our wildlife on Earth had been lost in the past 40 years. Professor Ken Norris, Director of Sciences at the Zoological Society of London, which was involved in the research, said, "This damage is not inevitable, but a consequence of the way we choose to live." Recently, to coincide with the historic summit on climate change in New York, we have had the People's Climate March in many world cities, highlighting it as one of the contributing factors to this loss of wildlife. For churches, the time from September the 1st until October the 4th is celebrated as creation time, when we are encouraged to pray for the protection of creation and the promotion of lifestyles that reverse our contributions to climate change. This matches with our practice of holding Harvest Thanksgiving at this time. We are grateful for what we have and remember the journey of our food from the producers to our table. Linking these together is a reminder that supporting the food bank is only one way to celebrate harvest. Finding a way of living which respects the earth rather than trashes it is another one. Some ecological writers claim that Christians merely exploit resources without any concern for the future. There may be Christians who have espoused such views, but it is not found in their holy scriptures. The Hebrew scriptures have much that is written against short-termism and encourages a concern for the future of the land, even in times of war. Jesus taught the meaning of life was not to be found in what we possessed, what we ate, or wore. The search to find out what it means to be human means finding our place within all of creation. It means exploring how we may live more simply, be aware of the cost to the earth of what we use, to accept that we should limit our lifestyle. One recent response to the People's Climate March claimed that climate change did not matter because of the huge problems of war and injustice. They are not separable. The need for oil and other commodities fuel the conflicts around the world. Let our harvest be a search to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with our God. And that was written by Terry E. Hemming.
And it's time again for letters to the editor, and we have 9 this week. And Jerry's going to start us off with the first, please.
Which is headed, "How could they get numbers so wrong?" and comes from Richard Parfitt. "Why should Winchester University be allowed to take on more students than they can accommodate? It says a lot for the university if they cannot work out how many rooms they have for students to stay in. I do hope that taxpayers' money is not going to be used to pay for their accommodation. It should be down to the university for their mistake. The university should not be allowed to get away with the way it is handling itself. Why should the residents have put up with more student houses and more problems?" Richard Parfitt, Walpole Road, Stanmore.
And a letter from Peter Marsh of East Stratton is headed, "No excuse to scrap affordable housing." At the council's cabinet meeting in August, members resolved to leave it up to their colleagues on the planning committee to determine whether any affordable homes could be provided. I have now read all the documents on the planning portal. This quote from the developers is the sum total of information provided to allow members to consider this matter. "The viability of developments is not sufficient to support any affordable housing." there is absolutely no information provided in the planning application for members of the public to reach that conclusion. Given that 40% affordable housing was deliverable when the Section 106 was agreed in 2009, and when WCC presented its case to the Planning Inspectorate in 2010. And given that house prices have gone up rather than down since then, and given that high-cost elements of the scheme are proposed to be removed, bus station, mobility, shop, etc., it does not seem reasonable that affordable housing is no longer viable. There is no coherent argument put forward by the developer or the council as to why no affordable homes are deliverable on this Silver Hill site. The planning application seeks to remove 146 homes from the 287 consented. The developer has not explained, to my knowledge, the relevant yields on the newly proposed retail versus the yields on the residential. Nor has the council set out in policy terms why additional retail space, beyond that already consented, is more important to the city than desperately needed affordable homes. I believe Winchester needs more homes in this location than it needs additional shops. The removal of 146 homes represents a failing on behalf of the applicant to respond to the requirements for additional homes as set out in the local plan. Peter Marsh, East Stratton, Winchester.
And another about homes from Karen McCleary. And this is headed Abide by the Democratic Process. We all witnessed national democracy at its best with the Scottish referendum. Last year, Winchester City Council and Kingsworthy Parish Council demonstrated a wonderful example of local democracy with their consultation over local plans for the new homes needed in Kingsworthy. They set up exhibitions over several weeks where local residents could see plans for the four proposed developments for the village and talk to the developers themselves, local councillors and planning officers, and ask any relevant questions. Following this, we were asked to vote on our preferred option, and subsequently the democratic decision was made for the housing development to be built on unused farmland off Loveden Lane. Cynical commercialism on the part of one of the disappointed developers, however, now threatens this democratic process. Despite the choice of local people, the building company, Drew Smith, continues with their application to build 57 dwellings on one of the rejected sites, Topfield, which is one of the last open spaces left in the village for locals to enjoy. Let us hope that our elected officers stay true to the democratic process and are not bullied into changing plans agreed by those of us who live in this village and care about our shared environment. Karen McCreely, Hookpit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
And yet another letter about planning and residents' concerns comes from Nicholas Dennis and is headed, Does Revenue Override Everything? Together with some of my neighbours from Worthy Lane, I attended the meeting of the City Council Cabinet on September the 22nd, when the various elements of the Winchester District Local Plan Part 2 were discussed. We were particularly interested in the proposals to develop the station approach, Carfax, Cattle Market and Worthy Lane sites. We were grateful for the opportunity to ask questions during the meeting. Answers from Cabinet members were mainly on the lines that they were questions of detail and that the time for them will come later and that no plans have been made yet and we are discussing principles at this stage. The question of principle that I think needs to be asked is, must the principle of maximising revenue from council-owned land override every other principle? This approach risks harming the unique historic character of Winchester, which is itself a revenue generator, by making it look more like other less interesting towns. It also conflicts with recommendations on transport, air quality, the visual environment, and open spaces that are in the Winchester District Local Plan. If the first criterion for new developments was whether they would make Winchester a more fascinating and enchanting place to visit, I suggest the economic gains might be just as good as from pursuing commerce, and the quality of life for residents would be improved. A useful comparison might be with York, where they seem to do well out of tourism, and where I cannot imagine such developments being proposed close to historic sites. Nicholas Dennis, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
With the heading Ignoring Own Town Access Plan, this letter is from Kate McIntosh of West End Terrace. It was rightly pointed out by Richard Wetherill, letters September the 18th, that a line of bus shelters does not constitute a transport interchange. But his example of Southampton Airport Station has few lessons for Winchester, as it is peripheral to the city centre. A better pattern to examine is Bath Spa, where a recently completed redevelopment creates a welcoming and generous pedestrian space adjacent to the station, with cafes and shops closely linked to the bus station. Car parking is discreetly tucked away to the rear of the station, with only taxis and blue badge holders permitted in the front. On the other side of the now quieter road is a Pentis, beneath which are several cafes and restaurants. This is the outer edge of a pedestrianised development leading through to the city centre. The irony is that Winchester City Council has recruited a senior staff member who claims to have been pivotal to this development. Why then, in our historic city, is the planning policy driving towards sucking even more cars into the land adjacent to the rail station, just after Network Rail has heavily invested in increasing parking on its own land? This is contrary to the Winchester Town Access Plan in 2011, the aims of which included to ensure that the vitality and resilience of the local economy is strengthened by planning for movement and access, which is economically and environmentally sustainable. To lead a transition to cycling, walking, public transport and low-carbon modes of travel. To reduce the negative effects of transport-related carbon emissions on all neighbourhoods, including the town's historic environment. To enhance the social and cultural well-being of Winchester by providing access for all. Invest for maximum benefit from public transport, and use new development as an opportunity to set standards that support the access plan. Kate McIntosh, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Excuse me. This letter is from Rupert Pitt and has headed it, Call in Some New Designers. Many citizens are deeply disappointed with the architecture that Allies and Morrison have produced for the Silver Hill scheme. A solution is for Henderson to hire another firm of architects, possibly Zaha Hadid, who designed for the Olympics, or Hugh Thomas, who has made such an excellent extension to the Black Boy. Comments have frequently been made about the rundown nature of the bus station, so it should be removed. One wonders why Stagecoach have not contributed towards its upkeep. Rupert Pitt, Stony Lane, Week.
And finally, a letter about some slightly different residents of Winchester. Pigeons are an increasing nuisance, says Chris Higgins. I'm seeking support to address the problems caused by the increasing number of pigeons in the city centre, in particular in the vicinity of the Buttercross and St Lawrence's Church in the square. Pigeons consistently roost on the ledges of the surrounding buildings, so the pavement between the church and the hairdresser's opposite is often so contaminated that walking out of the covered passageway into the square becomes a significant hazard, unless you're good at hopscotch. Visitors to St. Lawrence risk walking guano into the church, and it's no longer hygienic to hold any services there without first thoroughly hosing down the pavement. On many occasions, we've carried ladders down to clean out gutters and drive these pests away with anti-pigeon devices, but nothing seems to deter their homing instincts from returning to rebuild their nests, often on top of our defences. Many of our beautiful historic buildings are also being damaged, either by pigeon nests blocking drain hoppers or a build-up of acidic droppings which corrode the fabric. And the appearance of the conservation area is spoilt by unsightly spikes and netting plastered over so many buildings. I understand the Mayor of London has solved the problem in Trafalgar Square by making it illegal to feed the birds and then culling them. Could I appeal to the City Council not to underestimate the problem while they consider their pigeon control policy? It's much worse now than it was 10 or 20 years ago, possibly because we've moved to a fast food culture with a more partly edible litter on the streets. Chris Higgins, on behalf of the PCC of St. Lawrence Church, the Square, Winchester.
And this letter from Rodney Lyons of Pennsylvania Road, Exeter, has the heading, Looking Forward to Next Poetry Festival. Having lived in Winchester and later in Avington for some years, we were intrigued when a friend told us about the Winchester Poetry Festival. Would zippy Winchester provide an audience for something as quiet and personal as poetry? We decided to go for the weekend and enjoyed ourselves immensely. The poets and other speakers were generous with their time and the audience responded well. There was a shared enjoyment of the luxury of spending one's time in close reading, listening to speakers of the highest quality, and meeting congenial people, some old friends, and some who, like us, had travelled from a distance. Congratulations, Winchester. We're looking forward to the next poetry festival. Rodney Lyons, Pennsylvania Road, Exeter.
This letter from E. Dean is headed, Extend Free Travel to Students. So, having just finished school, aged 16, my son has started A-levels at Peter Simmons College in Winchester. Looking at bus pass prices, I am horrified to see Blue Star buses are charging £615 per annum for the 4.5-mile trip to get him to and from college every day. Obviously, he cannot pay for this himself, so it will fall to his parents, another bill. I live in an old council house in Otterbourne, and my son's father lives in Albrook. As single-parent households, we are not loaded. It is all very well giving free bus passes indiscriminately to every person of pensionable age, but when the government is giving young people little option but to go to college or a minimally paid apprenticeship job, it really is not fair to make them, effectively their parents, pay so much. The age at which a person moves from getting free transport to school and paying adult fares should be the point at which a young person finishes their education. Their travel requirements are not optional. Clearly, some over 65s do live on low incomes and deserve a free bus pass. But there are also lots of older people in Otterbourne, for example, who live in beautiful homes with a car and have plenty of funds. They do not need a free bus pass, and I'm sure they would be willing to pay a pound or two for their optional weekly shopping jaunts on the bus. Some might be as horrified as me that their 16 to 19-year-old grandchildren are subsidising their travel. Please, bus companies, government and Winchester City Council, 16 to 19-year-olds should still qualify as children, deserving free transport while they attend sixth form college and apprenticeship workplaces. E. Dean, Coles Mead, Otterbourne.
And thank you very much for reading those letters. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject that you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase, no space between Hampshire and Chronicle. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, we're still staying with the views of local people, and the column Your Say this week is from Robin, please.
And Your Say this week, we asked, do you agree with Westminster's decision to send warplanes to Iraq again? David Smart, 50, unemployed of Hydegate, Hyde, said, it sounds quite precarious to me. It seems that it is pretty dangerous out there, but I suppose the army have got to do their job. Catherine Brandwood, 31, wine merchant director of St Thomas Street, said, I don't think it's good. I don't think our interference will necessarily help the situation. But equally, I don't know how we can just sit back and watch. Tracy Cook, 35, barber of Bar End Road, said, it's not good, is it? I do think about the wars, and we're probably only in them because our government interferes. If we kept our noses out, we wouldn't have all these wars. And finally, Joshua Tyler, 22, pub supervisor of Stony Lane Week, said, I hate it. It's stupid and horrible. But we went over there only because of our allies in the First World War. It's that very fine line between invading a country and using force to help a country in turmoil.
And, of course, the Hampshire Chronicle have their own opinions, and this next item is editorial comment. And it's entertainingly headed, as useful as a chocolate teapot. News that the police will not enforce the new 20-mile-per-hour speed limit in Winchester city centre and parts of Hyde came as a surprise to everyone attending the town forum last week. It was generally, perhaps naively, assumed that if the limit was lowered, the police would act against the newly illegal behaviour. Now that it is clear no action will be taken, it is reasonable to ask a couple of questions. Should the police have this latitude to pick and choose what laws they enforce? What was the point of wasting time and money introducing something as useful as a chocolate teapot? The reduction in the speed limit is to be welcomed. A child struck at 20 miles an hour is much more likely to live than one hit at 30. People will argue that the signs themselves deter speeding. Perhaps initially, but their efficacy will decline if there's no sanction behind them. Would the City Council have taken the trouble had councillors known that the exercise was essentially toothless? Were the councillors and their officers aware beforehand of the stance of the police? A little bit of joined-up thinking in advance would have been helpful. And next we have First Person, and Jerry will be the voice this week of Ronald Allison.
Yes, and he calls his piece A Kingdom Still United, for now at least. Last month, Jennifer, my American-born wife, became one of us. After 29 years of permanent domicile, she pledged her allegiance to this country and became a citizen of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Because the United States government now allows dual citizenship, they used not to do so, Jennifer can remain an American as well. So when it comes to occasions like the Ryder Cup, she's in a win-win situation. As it happened, the citizenship ceremony was held the day before the independence referendum in Scotland, so it was not until over 24 hours later that she knew it was still a four-nation kingdom she was joining. Well, this was quite a relief for various reasons. One was significant, as she put it. Imagine having to live with the thought that Scotland had left the Union because I'd joined. Personally, I shared her delight at the no vote, as did those members of my family who are Scottish, living north of the border, and therefore entitled to vote. Others, now in England, were not pleased at being disenfranchised. It was for me an unsatisfactory way of deciding the future of the UK. Had the vote gone the other way and led to the breaking up of the Union, that would have meant the future of some 55 million or so of us being decided by about 2 million voters in Scotland. Something was wrong with that arrangement, surely. Of course, it's not all over yet, not by any means. The promises made by the three main party leaders in the last days before the referendum mean there will be changes in the way powers are devolved within the UK in the years to come, not only in Scotland. Wales, Northern Ireland, and, of course, England will want at least something approaching parity with whatever the Scots are granted by way of further autonomy. English votes for English laws is a battle cry already heard, though what that would mean in practical terms is not clear, at least not to me. Not another layer of government, please. One article in last weekend's Sunday Times did intrigue me. The headline was, "Keep the United Kingdom United, a superpower of city-states." It was by the chairman of the RSA City Growth Commission, which apparently has been exploring ideas about how to boost economic activity in urban areas of the UK outside London. They identified 15 areas based on the number of people living and working there. Among them was South Hampshire. Yes, us, alongside Manchester, Birmingham, Cardiff, Liverpool and all the usual big city suspects as part of a UK, each with increased powers and independence from Westminster. It certainly is a thought, South Hampshire as a city-state. Not one, I imagine, that everyone in our neck of the woods would necessarily welcome.
And Claire is going to give us Belgaron, that alternative look at the news. Thank you very much, Claire.
Firstly, Poetry Festival may find it hard to build up momentum. Good to hear that the first Winchester Poetry Festival has been hailed as a big success, attracting well-known poets of the calibre of Brian Patton, Michael Longley, Patience Agbabi and Jackie Rickey. The feeling among organisers and supporters is that it can become an event with a national reputation, rivalling ones held at Ledbury and Cheltenham. However, why is it to be held only every 2 years? Any momentum that is built up will quickly ebb away. Organisers will have to work hard just to re-establish its profile. And the second section of Belgaron is a picture of a strange-shaped bollard, perhaps Doctor Who designed, I don't know, by Kingsgate. And Belgaron asks, is this the work of a lost lorry wrestling with the back streets of ye old Winchester and failing? Perhaps the Eurasian tectonic plate has developed a fault line which runs directly through Kingsgate village, causing the 27-year-old bollard to shift? Either way, Belgaron thinks pedestrians had best watch their steps, and the van driver should check their inevitably newly crumpled chassis.
Thank you, Claire. Well described. We're going to historical items now. I'm going to start off with 200 years. October the 3rd, 1814, and these are a couple of rather gruesome pieces of news. The first one is headed "Duel Results in Willful Murder." A fatal duel took place last week in Newcastle Emlyn, Carmarthenshire. It appears that a Mr. Hislop, a gentleman of respectable family, went to Newcastle to view an estate and was invited by Mr. B of that place to dinner on Thursday. The former, however, behaved in an unbecoming manner, for which he was reprimanded and challenged Mr. B to meet him in the morning. The parties met on the Saturday. The ball from Mr. B's pistol shot Mr. H through the body and he died almost immediately. A coroner's jury returned a verdict of willful murder against persons unknown. The next item, the recent inclination to play with the fulminating balls and the fulminating powder will, we hope, receive a check from the following incident, which had very nearly proved fatal to an amiable little girl about 5 years of age. One of her brothers carried to the country several of the balls in question, and after using some, put the others into a drawer. The child, not knowing their nature, put one in her mouth, where it exploded, cutting her mouth very much, blowing out some of her teeth, and most seriously alarming the family.
100 years ago, October the 3rd, 1914. Boy receives 6 strokes of birch rod. Alton City Bench. Sitting as a children's court, the bench heard a charge against a boy named Alfred Fargent, the son of travellers who had been in the district hop-picking, of having stolen 7 shillings and 6pence. The property of John Collins at Binstead on September the 18th. The prosecutor, who is a labourer, stated that he was a labourer, and as he was getting up, the boy looked into his room and asked him the time. When taxed about the case, the boy began to cry and said, "My mother would not give me any breakfast, so I had to go and get some. I went into her house, but could not find any." The bench directed that the boy should receive 6 strokes with the birch rod. And the second paragraph. A representative of this journal was allowed the privilege of going over the Red Cross Hospital, which has been established at 4 the Close, the judge's lodgings, under the auspices of the Winchester Division of the British Red Cross Society. We had the opportunity of having short chats with the wounded men, but they did not care to talk much about their experiences at the front, and their reticence one could very well understand. To have seen comrades falling all around are a painful recollection with the soldier.
And 50 years ago, on October the 3rd, 1964, there are 2 items, the first of which has the heading £15 million scheme by 1967. The complete disappearance of steam engines from the railway lines of the southern region will be the result of new electrification scheme scheduled to be completed by 1967. Costing £15 million, the scheme entails electrifying the main line between Brookwood, Surrey and Bournemouth by means of the third rail system already applied on the Waterloo to Portsmouth line. And the second item, the Royal Army Pay Corps depot at Worthy Down, with its revolutionary designed buildings, is often considered to be the model establishment for Britain's army of the future. Certainly this reputation will be enhanced by proposals recently announced to construct there the first circular church to be built at any British garrison. The new church, due to be completed next summer, is designed to seat 137 on a semicircular basis, but with additional seats it will probably accommodate about 200 for special occasions.
25 years ago, October the 6th, 1989. Winchester City Finance Department is to increase its staff considerably to cope with the demands of the poll tax. And the city's taxpayers will have to pay for the extra staff. The number of staff in the community charge section, compared with the number in the present ratings section, will increase from 13 to 25 and could be higher, the chief executive, Mr. David Cowan, confirmed. And the second item could almost have been written this week. It's very encouraging that Winchester is admitting to a drink and violence problem. However, the licensees cannot control drinking without a lot more support from the police. The residents of Abbey Gardens experience drunken youths and tramps almost every day, which is also an irritation to children using the playground and the many tourists. It troubles the elderly residents of St. John's Home, too. This is not a new problem, and let's hope it is not swept under the carpet any longer.
Well, that completes the regular features from us this week. I've got a couple of information things for you, but starting with what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. And the first item is an article about the Winchester Dialogues, and they are to return to Winchester. An interview series, which raises money for a high-profile Winchester appeal, returns for its third season this month. With a starry lineup, the Winchester Dialogues is hosted by former artistic director of the Winchester Festival, John Miller. He came up with the programme as a way to support the cathedral's £19 million appeal to repair the building and improve exhibitions. The talks will continue to explore the relationship between church and state in the 21st century, featuring leading figures from religious and secular worlds. The programme started last year, and the new season kicks off on October the 10th at the Guildhall with Sir Mark Tully, former Bureau Chief BBC, New Delhi and State. He's a former Twyford School pupil. He studied theology at Trinity Hall, Cambridge, before returning to his birthplace, Calcutta, in 1965 as the BBC's India correspondent. He resigned in 1994, accusing the then Director General, John Burt, of running the corporation by fear. Dean of St Albans, the Very Reverend Geoffrey John, will follow on October the 17th. His appointment at Bishop of Reading in 2003 hit the headlines, as he was the first person to be openly in a same-sex relationship to be nominated to such a senior post within the Church of England. October the 24th sees BBC World Affairs editor John Simpson take to the stage. He has reported from 120 countries, including 30 war zones, interviewing many world leaders. The Right Reverend Richard Charters, Bishop of London, comes to Winchester on November the 14th. It is rumoured that he had much to do with the Archbishop's sermon for the post-Falklands War Thanksgiving service, which enraged the Prime Minister by calling for prayers for the dead on both sides. He also delivered the address at the memorial service for Princess Diana and preached the sermon at the wedding of Prince William and Kate Middleton. Last year, he gave the measured and moving address at Lady Thatcher's funeral in St Paul's Cathedral. The final talk at the Stripe Theatre in the University of Winchester on December the 5th is from former Archbishop of Canterbury, Lord Williams of Oystermouth. In 2002, he became the first Archbishop of Canterbury since the Reformation to be appointed from a position outside the Church of England, as his previous role was as Archbishop of Wales. John Miller said, "When we planned these dialogues over a year ago, we hadn't quite anticipated how church affairs and governance would become such front-page news, with the recent approval of the appointment of female bishops and the ongoing debate about same-sex marriage. The international aspects of interfaith relationships will be explored with our two distinguished foreign correspondents." The Dean, the Very Reverend James Atwell said, Our aim in inviting speakers from such a broad spectrum is that they should stimulate our thinking and relate faith to the marketplace. The audience response thus far leads us to hope that we will have succeeded in no small measure by the final one in December. Tickets cost £10, or £5 for the price of four, if purchased before October the 10th. And to book for these, you call the Cathedral Box Office on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And all of the talks start at 7 p.m. Now, before you go to those, you might want a jolly healthy walk. And Winchester has a health walk regime. Regular weekly walks of 1 hour, probably 2 miles. It's free and no booking is necessary. And I'll give you the two or three that are available from the point that you receive this piece of news. And it's Wednesdays at 9:30 a.m. And that goes from Old Friars Gate Medical Centre. That's in Winchester City Centre. And 1:30 from Stanmore Post Office, Cromwell Road. And if you can't do Wednesdays, you might do Thursdays, which starts at 10:15 a.m. from the Square in Bishop's Waltham. And on Fridays at 10 a.m. from outside Costa Coffee, next to Waitrose Week in Winchester. Now, if you fancy any of those, you have to contact Lydia. And her telephone number is 01962 848 725. That's 01962 848 725 and ask for Lydia. There's a talk on insects and flowering plants on Wednesday, October the 8th, and that's at Badgers Farm Community Centre. It's at 7:30 and it's a Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust illustrated talk by entomologist Jonathan Oakley. Plant and insect interaction and defence, habitat requirements for our treasured species, and how we can provide for insects that are fussy eaters. The cost of that talk is £3, including refreshments, and the number to contact is 01962 861 182. 01962 861 182. And there's a wine festival on offer, a wine festival early bird offer. Tickets are selling fast for a wine festival hosted by Global Experts. It runs from November the 21st to the 23rd at Winchester Guildhall, and early bird tickets are now up for grabs. Wine Festival Winchester is hosted by Susie Barry and Peter Richards, Masters of Wine, and resident experts on BBC One's Saturday Kitchen. Those tickets cost £25, and for them you go to thewinefestival.co.uk to book. That's all lowercase, no spaces, thewinefestival.co.uk. Sounds like a good offer, that one. And this little item is English as She is Spoken, a lecture discussing the different accents of the English language comes to Winchester next month. As part of the English Language Day, Winchester University will host English accents past, present and future at its Stripe Theatre. It looks at everything from where accents come from, why people care and what's happening to them now. It's led by Professor David Crystal. Starts at 7 o'clock on Monday, that's 7 p.m, Monday, October the 13th, and the doors open at 6:30 p.m. Tickets are free, but to reserve a seat, you go to English Language Today 2014.eventbrite.com. I'm going to spell Eventbrite. It's all one word, EventBrite. English Language Day 2014.eventbrite.com. And in the theatre at the Mayflower Southampton, 4 funerals and a wedding, Saturday, October the 10th at 7:30 p.m. And then there's something called Sing Along a Frozen, and I can't help you with what that is, but it sounds interesting. on Thursday, October the 12th to Monday, December the 22nd. It's a long run. And then on Tuesday, October the 14th at 7:30 p.m, The Sound of Murder Mystery. That again was the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton. The box office is 02380 711811. 02380 711811. And at the Plaza Theatre in Romsey, they are staging A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. And that's on Monday to Saturday, October the 13th to the 18th, 7:30 p.m. Box office there, 01794 512 987. That number again is 01794 512 987. Well, a good round of things to think about there. And our final information for you is the all-important lighting up times. On Saturday the 4th of October, the sun will set at 6:41 p.m. And on Wednesday the 8th of October, the sun will rise at 7:17 a.m. and set at 6:28 p.m. Okay. And we're going to continue now with the news. And Claire will lead us off with that first item, please.
Build on green fields, says Pines. Winchester should consider expanding onto green fields to ensure enough affordable housing is built in the next 20 years, a meeting heard last week. Labour group leader Chris Pines said the County Council should look at 4 or 5 small sites on countryside on the edge of the city. His proposal to look at pushing back the settlement boundary was supported by senior Conservative Ian Tate, the portfolio holder for housing services. They made the call at the town forum, which was discussing the new local plan part 2 that will shape development until 2031. Councillor Pines said at Greenfield Barton Farm the council had been able to get 40% social housing, but on brownfield sites the percentage was much lower, with potentially nothing at all of the £150 million Silver Hill scheme. He said, "We have to redress the balance. The only real option is to look at greenfield sites around the edge of the city." He suggested 5 or 6 sites with a maximum of 40 to 50 homes. It is an idea backed by local architect Paul Bulkley of Snug Projects, who proposes developing on greenfield sites on the edge of Winnall. The town forum agreed the idea should be looked at by planners. Steve Opakic, head of strategic planning at the City Council, said such a move may prove difficult to control, as landowners all around Winchester would promote their sites. If you make the decision that you want to look at greenfield sites for affordable housing, you would need to look at Pitt Vale, Oliver's Battery, north of Barton Farm, the Welch's land at Hairstock, he said. If you, the councillors, tell us to expand the settlement boundary, we would have to look at all of them. If you go for the Welch's land, you would be open to challenge Linden Homes, would say you need Pitt Vale. The town forum heard from Adam and Simon Welch, who have been promoting the development of land between Hairstock and Littleton for a mix of housing and open space. North Winchester was short of open space. The City Council was not addressing local needs, they said. But Mr. Opakic said there will be no need for Winchester to expand, as more than enough housing can be provided on already identified sites.
Gang strikes 14 times in 4 hours. Residents urge to lock up valuables. Police are urging residents to lock up their valuables after two villages near Winchester were targeted by an organised gang who struck 14 times in just 4 hours. Thieves took golf clubs worth £2,500, gardening equipment and power tools from sheds and garages. Sergeant Mark Lamper of Alresford Police said he thought an organised gang from elsewhere was responsible. It is believed it happened in the early hours of last Wednesday morning. The first call came in at around midnight after a disturbance in Cheriton, where 10 of the incidents took place until 4 a.m. Two men were seen attempting to break into a garage on the B3046, which runs through the village, but fled when residents shouted at them. Three fuel containers were taken from a property in School Lane and were later located by a police dog, having been abandoned by the offenders, said Sergeant Russ Hodges of Country Watch. Nothing was taken from six outbuildings, three in the Goudens and three on the B3046. Power tools and a lawnmower were taken from a garage in the main road, B3046, as were two high-value bicycles from another property, said Sergeant Lamper. He said the calls came in from September the 24th to the 27th, when people noticed items were missing, but it was thought the incidents occurred around the same time. From September the 20th to the 27th in Kingsworthy, two sets of golf clubs worth £2,500 were taken from properties in Hinton Fields and Campion Way, and two bikes from Hinton Fields and one from Ilex Close. Just days later, on September the 26th, a radio was stolen from a car in Freeman's Yard, Cheriton, with another attempted theft in the same road. Sergeant Lamper said, "We don't think that the incidents in Cheriton are related to Kingsworthy. We urge people to secure their valuables, don't leave them on display, and register them on immobilise.com. We are increasing foot patrols, especially in the evenings. These people obviously were looking for specific stuff. They usually target one place and then move on and do it somewhere else." He said the force would work closely with the neighbourhood watch to keep residents informed. Patricia Culpin, a NHW coordinator in Cheriton, reacting to the news, said, "That's staggering. I knew about one, but I didn't know about the others. If it's a gang, they will come through a village, but that is the most we have ever had. We have warned people to lock everything up. On October the 10th to the 11th, Winchester Rural North Safer Neighbourhoods team is hosting a crime prevention event in Springvale and Fraser Roads, Kingsworthy."
When she read out the list of what's on, Roz, with her usual self-effacing modesty, left out this item. "Expect the unexpected as a Winchester theatre prepares to thrill audiences with an award-winning comedy thriller. As the nights draw in, the Chesil Theatre sets about final preparations for its next show, Sleuth by Anthony Schaffer. The fast-paced whodunit combines a love for murder mystery with practical jokes and game-playing to create a menacing pattern of psychological teasing with doses of dark humour. Director Roz Lydiard said, "With all these elements to bring to life, Sleuth has been a pleasure and an exciting play to direct. The clever script pushes the boundaries of all disciplines of theatre production, from set design to sound effects. The actor's challenge has been to keep up with the many twists and turns in the plot. The action kicks off on October the 4th until the 11th at 7:45 p.m. with a 2:30 p.m. matinee on October the 11th. There's no Sunday performance. And for tickets, call 07527 471 539 or search Ticket Source online.
Thank you, Jerry. And now Claire has another item for us.
A little different. Town Forum discusses latest local plan developments. Winchester should be more like York than Basingstoke, civic chiefs were told. The question was raised as city councillors discussed the local plan part two and ways the city could develop over the next 20 years. One potential scheme is the huge redevelopment of the station approach area on Stockbridge and Andover Roads. At the town forum last Wednesday, Dr. Nick Dennis, a local resident for 35 years, said a report by consultant Tibbalds was based on the assumption that the new development should be about maximising development and potential income for the City Council. He said other issues like tackling air pollution and boosting tourism were downplayed. Long-term prosperity may depend on the seemingly gentler approach, said Dr. Dennis. We should try to become more like York than Basingstoke. I ask councillors to rebalance their approach. The City Council is looking to develop the swathe of land stretching from Gladstone Street across Stockbridge Road to Andover Road and the cattle market. Local architects such as Snug Projects propose building large offices of up to 7 storeys, and the City Council is considering redeveloping the cattle market, as could the Conservative Club. The club is listed in City's council papers as having the potential to provide 54 homes. Eloise Appleby, City Council Assistant Director, said one idea for station approach was creating a business quarter to attract modern, high-tech, young companies to the city as the public sector drinks. They want modern offices and good broadband. We are struggling to provide that in old buildings, she said. Councillor Dominic Hiscock, for the Liberal Democrats, said economic growth was important to encourage people to live and work in Winchester and stop people commuting 24,000 miles a year to work in London.
And now for something completely different from Robin.
A light-hearted item, this. On the front page, there is a photograph of some pigs, and it has the title, Piggies Go to Market. And it shows a crowd obviously enjoying themselves, laughing and shouting, and the caption is, and they're off, eventually. Piglet racing was one of the attractions of a hog-themed day at the Hampshire's Farmers Market in Winchester last Sunday. And on inner pages, there are 5 more illustrations of the crowd still enjoying themselves and of the pigs. And it's headed Hampshire Hog Day. And the main heading is, They're Hogging the Limelight. And the text says, These little piggies went to market and had a lovely time racing round the streets of Winchester. Piglet racing was one of the attractions of a hog-themed day at the Hampshire Farmers Market in Winchester last Sunday. There were also pig-themed competitions for children and the opportunity to taste pork products. Hampshire Hog Day was the centrepiece of the market celebrations of the British Food Fortnight, which runs until Sunday.
Thank you, Robin.
Women celebrate 80 years of helping. A women's group is celebrating 80 years of helping others around the world. Soroptimist International of Great Britain and Ireland, known as CIBGI, brings together women of all ages and backgrounds to raise money for charities. The Winchester and District branch is celebrating the milestone by expanding a project to make dresses for girls at their sister club in the Gambia. This year, the 34 members worked with girls from Henry Beaufort, St Swithin's and Test Valley schools to create 136 pillowcase dresses. And the scheme proved so popular, the group now wants to involve more schools. They hope to launch it as a competition over the coming months. The branch also supports Winchester Night Shelter, Young Carers and Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance. SIGBE is hosting a conference in November in Harrogate to mark the anniversary, and members from Winchester will be attending. And there's a rather lovely photograph of a group of these lady Soroptimists. Very jolly and very elegant.
Credit union to go online or phone only. A credit union which helps steer people away from loan sharks has closed more than half of its Hampshire service points, including Winchester. In a move which councillors have described as a disaster, Hampshire Credit Union, or United Savings and Loans, USAL, as it is known, has closed 8 of its 14 service points across the county. The union is a member-based cooperative that helps those in financial difficulties with low-interest loans and advice. It is moving to online and telephone banking, but some users are worried they will be unable to use the service. Margaret Gunn, who is 66, has muscular dystrophy and lives in Winchester. She said she received no warning of the closure earlier this month. She said, "I use it to put money in regularly. I don't have a financial problem, but I like to manage my money. I got a letter saying it was closed and that I could email my account number and sort code to transfer money, which I didn't think was secure, or text, which I cannot do. I will have to get my computer working. If people don't have a computer, I don't know how they're going to use it." Jenny Meadows, manager of Winchester Citizens Advice Bureau, said she is concerned it will make it harder for people to open a bank account. She said, "The banks locally are getting more and more difficult to get a basic bank account, and some people don't have the relevant paperwork. Hampshire Credit Union has always been much more flexible. The Winchester branch opened in 2008, before merging into the Hampshire Credit Union, based in Portsmouth. Winchester councillor Chris Pines helped open it. The Chronicle broke the news to him. He said, "My money was the first the credit union took. I think the closure is a disaster. It was really serving a purpose. When you look at older people, 50% of them don't have a computer, so we are potentially dumping a whole chunk of the population who don't have online access. These people will start off disadvantaged, and this will disadvantage them further." Jeff Brown, chief executive of USAL, said the branches were not making enough money to justify being open. "We constantly review the provision of services for members to make sure we get the best value for members as we can," he said. "It's apparent that despite a huge amount of investment and promotion in these networks trying to build local interest, we just don't see the footfall for us to validate maintaining these facilities. It's a simple fact that this credit union has to pay its way, and we cannot earn sufficient income to cover the costs of those facilities when very few people are turning up. We are very careful with our members' money, and we can't afford to waste it." He said the move to online and telephone banking has been in the pipeline for years, and other options have been provided. "People can telephone us, text, or go online," he added. "Most people that use our facilities have smartphones. 1 Isle of Wight, 2 Fareham, and 3 Bracknell Forest service points remain open.
This is quite a long story, but we think you'll find it interesting and rewarding. As excited children across the country woke up on Christmas morning, little Jess Vardy slipped into unconsciousness. Her parents, Dawn and Dan, were told the devastating news. Their 5-year-old daughter had a rare and aggressive cancer. "You never think your child will have cancer. It just didn't come into the equation," said Mr. Vardy. "Suddenly you have to treasure the precious memories as a family because you don't know how many more you'll have." Remarkably, though, Jess has amazed doctors and she is now in remission. "Jess is our walking miracle. We were told doctors would do everything they could, but the chances of her surviving were slim, just 10 to 15%. Initially, they said there was little hope of her lasting more than a year. To hear the scans are clear is just amazing. They've given us back our daughter."
It was the day before Jess's 5th birthday, in 2012, when she complained her hand hurt. The youngster, who loved gymnastics, swimming and ballet, had a fever as well as the pain in her hand. Jess went to the GP and the family had several diagnoses, including juvenile arthritis. The Swanmore Primary School pupil was due to see a specialist in March 2013. But the pain got so bad, the family had to rush her to Southampton General Hospital on December the 21st. Doctors discovered a hard lump under Jessie's left arm and she was transferred to Pyham Brown Ward. An MRI scan on Christmas Eve revealed she had a tumour the size of an orange under her arm. Though discharged with medication so she could spend Christmas at home, Jessie's health deteriorated. Mr. Vardy said the pain got so bad that she was slipping in and out of consciousness. Jess had to be rushed back to hospital and put on morphine. Doctors did a biopsy of the lump and it was diagnosed as a rhabdoid tumour. A rhabdoid tumour is a rare, highly aggressive malignancy of early childhood and is primarily found on the kidney. Around 2,400 children and teenagers are diagnosed with cancer every year in the UK. That's around 6 every day. But only 2 children a year are diagnosed with a rhabdoid tumour.
Mrs. Vardy, 36, explains, "Her prognosis was looking poor. As this tumour usually affects the kidney, doctors expected the tumour under her arm was a secondary site. Jess was given full body scans, and I think everyone was surprised when we found out it was actually the primary site. Her prognosis immediately got better, but we knew that we still had a long way to go. Jess began the year-long treatment on the highest toxic form of chemotherapy on January the 19th last year, and undergoing a week in hospital every 3 weeks to reduce the size of the tumour at Pyham Brown Ward in Southampton and Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Her immune system failed to work, so she picked up every illness imaginable. But Jess fought on. Dawn, a former social worker who is training to be a teacher, says, those weeks Jess was well enough, she went back to school. These were the times that she looked forward to, as she could be with her friends, and she got back a sense of normality for a while. The tumour responded well and shrunk considerably. Last June, the family from Bishop's Waltham were sent to Stanmore Hospital in London to have it removed. The family feared medics would be forced to remove Jess's entire arm to ensure they got rid of the tumour, but they were lucky. Though Jess lost some of the function in her arm, she worked hard with the physiotherapist to get movement back again. She then had to undergo yet more treatment, this time radiotherapy, every day for 6 weeks to target the area where the tumour was. After the radiotherapy, Jess had to go back on chemotherapy until November. She's such a bubbly character who's never stopped smiling. She's been so brave and has had a dogged determination to fight, said Mrs. Vardy.
The battle paid off. This year, Jess has been told she is in remission. We have to come back every 3 months for scans and x-rays, and this will be done for the next 5 years. The older she gets, the better the prognosis is that the cancer won't come back. I look at her body and see all the scars and her now deformed hand, and it's unbelievable what she's been through. To see her smiling and doing the things she used to love doing, like swimming, though, and now learning to ride a bike, is such a joy as a parent. Today, Dawn and Dan are grateful to the teams and people who have given them their daughter back. They now want to do something, to raise awareness of childhood cancer and money for those who are vital in helping families through it. So far, with the support of the community, they have raised £6,000 for Southampton Hospital's charity. Teachers from Bitton Park School, where Mr. Vardy works, ran the Great South Run, and the local postman cycled the Three Peaks. Their own fundraisers included Tough Mudder, Race for Life, a football tournament, and a charity ball. Mr. Vardy added, "We feel like we have been in an extremely privileged position, which made us stronger as a family as a result. And now we want to help others." And the article is illustrated by three pictures. One of Jess Vardy. The second is of Jess in hospital last year. And at the bottom of the page, there is a photograph of the whole family together.
What a remarkable little girl. And science too, to help her. Wonderful story. And next one from Claire, please.
The Fonz shows his colours. It was happy days for Winchester City Football Club as they got the thumbs up from the Fonz in Hedge End last weekend. Henry Winkler, who played Fonzie in 1970s hit sitcom Happy Days, was on the south coast ahead of their key FA Cup clash against Newport, Isle of Wight last Saturday. The sitcom star was in enemy territory the previous day after giving a talk at Newport's Medina College on overcoming dyslexia. But he showed his true colours on returning to the mainland, where he stayed at McDonald Botley Park Hotel in Hedge End. City season ticket holder and committee member Robert Conway works at the hotel and took the opportunity to recruit a new fan. "I had a selfie with him, as you do these days," he said. One of the guys from the club said, "If you see him, try and get a picture of him with the scarf." He said Mr. Winkler preferred fly fishing to football, but was more than happy to have the photo taken. Unfortunately, the citizens couldn't keep their cool, letting a 3-goal lead slip in the second half to draw 3-3. And there's pictures of Henry Winkler with Robert Conway, and also as the Fonz from the hit 70s sitcom Happy Days.
Thank you very much, Claire. And that concludes all the Hampshire Chronicle articles and extracts from us this week. Can I just give you a reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. I'll give you that number again. It's 01962 870 370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if you have any friends or families who are partially sighted and would like to have this service listening to us every week, then please also use Irene's number, 01962 870 370. We're always welcome new listeners, and we can look after them once we have their names and addresses. And we say thank you again to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and to our hard-working copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thank you too to our readers, from Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Goodbye.
Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz. Goodbye. Please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Have a very good week and thank you for listening.